This is Marco Reus.
This is Shinji Kagawa.
This is Nuri Sahin.
Hello, this is Jaden Sancho.
And you're listening to the Yellow Wall podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 475 of the Yellow Wall Pods. I'm your host, Stefan Butzko, and today we'll talk about Borussia Dortmund hiring Lars Ricken as their new CEO of Sport and Sven Mislintat as their new technical director. Also, we'll talk about the annoying 1-1 draw against Bayer Leverkusen, and we will talk about whether or not the upcoming league game against RB Leipzig is significant considering there is a Champions League semi-final clash against PSG looming. For that and more, join me, Lars Pollmann. Hello, Lars. How are you doing?
Hello, Stefan. I've just been listening to a lot of podcasts this week, and you are talking quite slowly because I listen to everything on 1.5 times speed.
That's actually how I edit the Yellow Wall Pod if I do it, because I think since I'm a very slow talker, 1.5 speed is way better. I'm also here in 1.0 speed, Matthias Zug. Hello, Matthias. How are you doing?
I am doing fine, Stefan. How are you?
I'm doing fine myself. Thank you. All right. Let's get into it. I think we should lead with the biggest news. And that is, of course, that Borussia Dortmund announced, was it Monday?
Yep.
Can't even remember what day it was. That starting May 1st, Lars Ricken will be the new CEO Sport. That's a position that hasn't previously existed, but will take basically the sporting responsibilities of Hans-Joachim Watzke over and will be vested into Lars Ricken, who of course was the head of the youth coordinator, the head of the youth department. I don't know what the position exactly is in English. However, that is going to happen. And we will also have a new technical director with the old chief scout Sven Mislintat returning to Borussia Dortmund, also starting May 1st, next to Sebastian Kehl, who remains the sporting director. I think that is momentous news. This is probably going to have a huge impact. Lars, obviously, Carsten Kramer and Tress also extended their contracts by the set in the pre-talk. Maybe no one cares about this, but still, if you want to talk us a little bit through all the contract extensions and contracts that were doled out and not doled out, maybe we'll start there before we talk about what this means and who is in what exact position now.
Yeah, so I think Lars Ricken has signed a contract until 2027, as you mentioned, as CEO of Sports, which is a position that had to be created because Hans-Joachim Watzke accumulated basically too much power and responsibility over the years. As, you know, the head of the CEO department, because they have three CEOs for different things, or I guess you would probably call Thomas Tress CFO. I'm not too much into the corporate world, so don't take my word on it, but basically Thomas Tress is still responsible for basically everything that has to do with Dortmund being on the stock exchange and compliance and all that stuff, and Carsten Kramer is responsible for marketing. Those two have also signed contracts until 2027, so they have stability on that level for 3 years now. I think it makes sense to have that, all those contracts running for the same time, just so you don't have to worry too much about that. Sven Mislintat, you mentioned, has returned to Dortmund. He's also actually returned to the post of technical director because he held that for a short while after being promoted from head of scouting in, I want to say, 2017, shortly before he left for Arsenal.
I'd forgotten about that little wrinkle, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, it's also Edin Terzic was the technical director. Obviously, Terzic and Mislintat will have very different responsibilities and roles. So what the basic reason behind that stuff is that in Dortmund's corporate organigram, I don't know what that would be, a hierarchy, whatever in English, directly below the chief executive or whatever, chief financial officers, all that stuff, is the director, the directors. So Lars Ricken was director of youth department, or however that would be translated into English. Now Missenthal is technical director. And that's basically just a term to describe their rank in the hierarchy. I think in effect, we'll talk a bit later about, you know, how the roles will, you know, shake out and what the actual responsibilities will be. But it has been reported, which I find quite interesting, apropos of nothing, perhaps, that Missenthal has actually signed a contract running until 2028, so 1 year longer. Not sure what that's all about. And I suppose actually the biggest news outside of Ricken getting the job is Sebastian Kehl not getting the job, because obviously he was the favorite, or considered the favorite, when or if Dortmund were to make an internal appointment, because obviously he's been sporting director for now a couple of years. He's been quite vocal about wanting the promotion, and I suppose the original plan might have been to give him the promotion, because it makes sense to invest in people. And obviously Kehl has returned in a different capacity a few years back now, so he's been around the block a bit with the club. But I think we've talked on this show, and you know, people will have read about it quite a few times, that the relationship between Kehl, Watzke, Terzic has not always been the smoothest. And I think it was, the writing was sort of on the wall that they didn't really want to give Kehl the job, but I think he was still the favorite, because nobody really saw Ricken coming, and there was no obvious outside alternative. I mean, I think it's only 2 or 3 weeks ago that someone quite respected around Borussia Dortmund actually posed the question in an article whether Watzke would actually delay his departure from, you know, sporting responsibilities, because they couldn't find anyone. So I think it's quite telling that nobody really reported on Ricken being a viable candidate, not because he isn't a viable candidate, but just because nobody really saw it coming. So I suppose we can give Dortmund credit for keeping that card close to the vest.
Yeah, that is for sure, especially since I don't know which episode, but this recent episode did criticize that there are a lot of leaks coming out of the Dortmund camp, which in the past weren't, I don't know, I wouldn't say as frequent. Matthias, Lars Ricken obviously is most well known for the goal of the century that he scored against Juventus with this absolutely beautiful lob. But yes, he has been within the club as the director of the youth department for quite a while, and been very successful at it. Obviously born in Dortmund, and fun fact, Lars, I don't know if you want to tell the story, when was he born?
On the 10th of July 1976, so on the day 13 years before me.
Correct. And also LarsRicken.de, I don't know if there's a minus in between or not, but it was the very first website I went to when I had the very first access to internet on the old AOL dial-in modem, because I had no idea where to actually go. So I think he was on DSF and dropped that he had this website. So LarsRicken.de was the very first website I went to. So I don't know if that is interesting or not, but it's, I guess, also a fun fact. Now, Matthias, sorry for interrupting my long-winded question, but what do you make of the decision to take Lars Ricken and not Sebastian Kehl for this job?
Well, I would say overall right now it makes sense, because Lars Ricken, notwithstanding obviously his legendary status at the club because of helping to win the Champions League against Juve all those far too many years ago, but the fact that he's been, as you mentioned, part of the youth system and youth setup for a very long time, he is more experienced than Sebastian Kehl when it comes to not being on the pitch type duties at the club. Sebastian Kiel has only been doing this for a few years, whereas Ricken has been doing this for a very long time. I don't even know how long, to be perfectly honest, but it's been a long time. He's deeply respected and well entrenched in the club, in the city, and obviously amongst the fan base. You know, I mean, it's a safe hire in the sense of, you know what you're getting, you know who he is, everyone is aware of who he is. Dortmund's youth setup has brought through a lot of good players, also players that they just brought in and then played a couple of seasons and then moved up, like Christian Pulisic as an example. So, you know, he obviously knows Edin Terzic from Terzic's time coaching at that level. So, I mean, it's one big Dortmund family, really. Nobody is an outsider. You know, Mislintat isn't an outsider. Yeah, he's an outside hire, but he was at the club for, you know, a decade and a half plus, or a decade and a half. Yeah, more than that. I think 98 to 2017 or something like that. So just shy of 20 years. So it's very much a everybody knows everybody. That can be beneficial, because you don't have to get to know each other and understand how everybody works. You already know how everybody works together. That's a huge benefit in an organization at the professional level, in any business. Now, as far as him being able to run the sporting side of things, I don't know. I mean, deeply involved in the youth setup, so he obviously understands that. The day-to-day sporting aspects of the club, that will be Kiel and Mislintat, so he won't really be that involved there. It's kind of a moving up in the ranks that I believe probably befits his experience, the success at youth level, and obviously his status within the club.
Lars, what is your opinion on this appointment?
Well, to be honest, at first I was quite surprised. Hadn't really occurred to me, even though now looking back, I think, for example, the appointment of Thomas Broich in the youth department, he's a very well-respected youth coach who doesn't necessarily, or I'm pretty sure he won't actually coach a team, but rather be a, I don't know how to put it, give the guidelines or whatever in the youth department. So having someone like that come in, obviously he's not going to take Ricken's job necessarily, but when an appointment like that is made, maybe our antennas should have gone up a bit. And I think a few people on Twitter I follow kind of made that connection, which I didn't necessarily make. But thinking back a bit, it sort of makes perfect sense, because as I alluded to earlier, it is quite a corporate role. I think Matthias hit it on the head. He's not going to be, the leading voice in the day-to-day business around the first team, which actually Watzke wasn't either. Obviously, Watzke was, the predecessor, because in that area of the hierarchy, he was responsible for the sporting endeavors of the club. But obviously, Watzke isn't going to have a day-to-day impact on, the relationship between players and coaching staff or whatever. That's not what, the CEO has to do. He's responsible for personnel decisions, for strategy, for budgeting and all that stuff. And I think because it's such a fairly corporate role, Sebastian Kiel wasn't actually a greatest fit, because as Matthias also alluded to, he's relatively inexperienced outside of his playing days. Sporting director and CEO are quite different roles. I think a lot of times the sporting director doesn't actually want to be promoted necessarily, because the responsibilities are so different. And from that perspective, I think it makes sense. It's also probably something that they needed to do to keep Ricken, because I don't know how long he wanted to stay at this current level at the youth system, because ultimately he's achieved basically everything you can there. Having turned Dortmund into a title machine at the under 17, under 19 level, I don't think a German side is very likely to win the Europa Youth League anytime soon, just because a lot of other teams are set up differently and take more of an aim in that regard. So I don't know how much more he could have achieved there. And at the age of 47, I think this is the perfect time to make another step. And he steps into a role that he should be more comfortable with. I think the most important thing about him, from all you hear about him from, you know, public sources now, but also when you just talk to people who know stuff around the club, and obviously being at the youth level, that's a bit more accessible than, you know, the Bundesliga side or whatever. He's a collaborative person. He's not going to, you know, put his fist on the table, as we say in German, and you know, have the Buster methods. He's going to allow people to work within their strengths and, you know, use or make good use of what Kehl does best, what Nissintat does best, and ultimately be more of a moderator. And I think, as I said earlier, Watzke over the years assumed so many roles. He's a he's the leading voice at Dortmund. He's the leading voice in the German Federation. He's the leading voice at the league and all that stuff. I think it was never realistic for any one person to have all those hats on their head. So it makes sense to go with a broader approach. And I think for that, the personality that we know of Ricken kind of fits very well. Obviously, nobody really knows if he's up for the job in terms of can he or does he have a strategic vision and all that stuff. But I think when someone has worked at this sort of level, obviously in a different capacity, but sort of level for, I think, 16 years now. I think he stopped playing and basically immediately went into the youth setup, which he's been director of for, I think, 3 years now. If that person doesn't get the confidence of those in the know at the club, I don't know who would. And from that perspective, I think it's a very sensible hire.
All right. Thanks for that insight. I personally think that Lars Ricken is a very serene guy, and especially, I mean, you say he's not going to be communicating permanently, but I do think he will have to, you know, play the part of every now and then speaking about the state of the union, if you will. And I have confidence in him doing a relatively good job communicating the overall state of Borussia Dortmund and, you know, opining on important matters of sports in Germany. So this is certainly, you know, being the CEO of sport, if you will, of Borussia Dortmund, I think in German football is a very important role. And I think he started as the head of the youth department in 2021. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I think of, you know, people at the club, I think Lars Ricken is a very suitable guy. Matthias, do you think, or do you agree with me that Lars Ricken, especially in the PR sort of things, will do a good job, even though we all know he is not one that seeks out the limelight like a lot of other people in these positions?
Well, I think so. He always comes across very amiable, very likable. He's a younger guy in the sense that he's under 65. he's under 50. I think when it comes to that, he'll do well. And, you know, he's well versed in the media spotlight, given the media spotlight that was around him when he came up through the youth ranks and played for Dortmund, and then, of course, scoring in the Champions League final. So, yeah, I don't think this will faze him one bit.
Then I guess we can move on to the... So you talked about the organigram hierarchies. Now we have a sporting director and a technical director. How exactly do you believe that... maybe even this trifecta will work together? I've read your piece you wrote for Fußball.news. I thought it was kind of insightful because when
kind
I...
Kind of.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Because when I it was insightful because when I opened up the other news articles that I first read, be it Ruhrnachrichten or I think that's all I read, honestly. No one really cared to describe how exactly their roles would look like. So if you could do the same for our dear listeners now, I would very much appreciate that.
I mean, I have to preface this by saying that we are all sort of reading tea leaves a little bit. I mean, obviously, you talk to people who might know things, but it's not like anything set in stone because ultimately they... both Ricken and Mislintat only take up their new positions next week. Obviously, I mean, especially Mislintat, basically we've known he was going to return for, let's say, a month now. So they have had discussions, no question, about, you know, what he should be doing in the meantime, let's say. Because obviously, maybe starting at the bottom of the trifecta, Mislintat as the technical director. As I alluded to earlier, the director stuff, that's basically about pay grade and responsibilities. I think he's fairly likely to be doing what he used to do back when he was the head of scouting. So, you know, identifying players, doing the groundwork for possible signings, coordinating, you know, the scouting area. Obviously, they do have a head of scouting, which I think is Eduard Graf, but don't quote me on that. I mean, scouts never have much of a profile in Germany, so it's kind of hard to keep track of that. Might actually be Laurent Busser, who came over from Bayern, but one of those two guys, I think. So yeah, I think Mislintat, he's actually in the press release, Dortmund have made notice of his role basically being squad planner, which makes perfect sense to me. I think Mislintat has always been at his best when he could just identify players and, you know, sign them, whether in a responsible role or, you know, work in a facilitating manner. I mean, if you look at the Stuttgart side that has been fantastic to watch in the current Bundesliga season. A lot of those players came when Mislintat was their sporting director. We all know the kind of transfers Dortmund made during his first go around here. Even though I'm always reluctant to give him credit for Shinji Kagawa, because Shinji Kagawa was offered to a lot of German clubs by his agent from back when he played in Japan by the name of Thomas Kroth. So, for example, if things had turned out a bit differently, Shinji Kagawa could have gone to Cologne, for example.
Or Hertha.
Or Hertha. Yeah. Some of those clubs. I definitely know about Cologne, maybe Hertha as well. So
I definitely know about Hertha.
Yeah, so it's not like Mislintat, by the nickname of Diamond Eye, spent all his nights watching second division Japanese football and identified Shinji Kagawa by the grace of his knowledge or whatever. No, he was offered and then obviously they looked at him and identified him as a good player. So it's not like they don't deserve any credit, but I always dislike when people say that Kagawa was a missing touch sign. But anyway,
you know what? I remember when this was announced, so there were rumors, and I you know, as one does, the old YouTube scout, you know, found a highlight reel of him, and that was probably the biggest no-brainer just of these highlight clips alone to sign him for the, what was it, 350,000 euros back then. So yeah, I myself could have been the diamond eye in that.
I mean, this is a major tangent, but the biggest no-brainer by a YouTube video is actually Mitchell Langerak in the Asian yes. Asian Champions League for what was it, Melbourne Victory or whatever?
Yes,
against I don't know whom, some Asian side. That what to this day I think the greatest goalkeeping performance I've ever seen, and it's a great YouTube video. So look it up. Maybe we can put it in the show notes or whatever. Anyway, we know Mislintat is very good at identifying players, and I think that's precisely what he's going to do at Dortmund. And then Sebastian Kehl. Basically doing what he does now. So, you know, coordinating all the stuff between, you know, coaching staff and players, medical and coaching staff and all that stuff. he's still going to be on the bench as far as we know, and in terms of transfers, because that's obviously the meatiest subject. He is, from my understanding, still going to be the person, you know, doing the actual talking with players, with agents, with clubs. And if Mislintat has identified a player and Kehl has, verhandelt, what's the word?
Negotiated.
Negotiated, yes, thank you. Negotiated contract and transfers and all, transfer fees and all that, I think it's going to come down to Lars Ricken having a look at the budget, having a look at the strategic outlook of, you know, does this player really fit what we want to be and do, and does he have resale value and all that good stuff? And if Lars Ricken gives the go-ahead, then the transfer should go ahead. So I think ultimately Ricken isn't going to be super hands-on in that stuff. I think that's why they went for him. Because as I said earlier, he's going to allow the other people to their jobs without too much interference. Taking a big picture view, I would be very surprised if Lars Ricken suddenly wanted to negotiate deals himself and all that stuff. That's what you have a sporting director for. And all the indications are that they want to actually extend Kehl's contract. I think that was also in the press release. So it's fairly likely that this setup, as I've tried to describe it, is going to be in place for a while.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Obviously, there were a lot of articles written where the headline was, "This is a defeat for Sebastian Kehl." Matthias, do you agree with that notion? And B, do you think this trifecta can work well together? And what do you expect from these changes overall going forward?
So to point A, who knows? I don't think so. I mean, it's the media doing what the media does in that sense. You got to have a headline that somebody will click on. Whether it's a personal defeat for Sebastian Kehl, the only one who can answer that question is Sebastian Kehl and not Kicker. So I don't really put much stock in that. As far as B, can they be successful? Does it make sense? Yeah, I think they can work well together. They, like I said, they already know each other very well. You've got now people that are very specialized in their fields that they're going to be working in. And I believe that's always beneficial, especially in today's business world. And the Bundesliga and football and club football is a business, not just a pastime. So having a more professional business set up, I think, benefits a club overall.
Do you have any certain concrete expectations in terms of when it comes to squad planning, what kind of direction of squad planning, what emphasis, should be put on? Do you have certain expectations from Sven Mislintat, for example, to find more younger, talented players from outside of the league again? Or where would you like to see the strategy of the club sporting-wise go? Maybe not instantly, but let's say over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, expectations, get better. let's call that the baseline expectation. No, I think, Mislintat's not going to go out and do any scouting himself. He's going to have a scouting team that does that and works on transfers. And it's kind of the direction of what they're going to go. I believe, they tried some things this season with some more seasoned veteran players. I would say the jury's still out on that as mixed results. Zabica is kind of paying good now. So we'll have to wait and see. At the same time, you also have to look at the now champion of the Bundesliga in Leverkusen. They brought in players like Robert Andrich, Granit Xhaka, and Grimaldo, who are all 28 or older. And they have definitely helped that team, to say the least. So, finding a good balance, not going full youth project like they did for a few seasons, not just being a senior retirement home either. So finding a few players in their prime, kind of in that 26 to 30-year-old range to supplement or as players kind of progress through. And then, find a few new talents, be that, I would say, also domestically within Germany itself and in the surrounding areas. You look at Netherlands and Belgium and so on. And Denmark, I think, expanding more regionally in that aspect, I think would really, really benefit the club. Not just looking for, hey, who can we find at PSG or Manchester City in their youth squads? Granted, that has paid off a few times. My expectation is a balanced approach. If you're going to bring in veteran players, they have to be veteran players that will have an instant impact. I would say Zabitza took a little bit longer than I would have liked, but he's still having an impact now when it's really, really important. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my expectation, a more balanced squad building versus one or the other. And, yeah, I mean, identifying the areas of the squad that need improvement, I mean, that, okay, yeah, that's a baseline expectation of anybody in this job. But then also having a coaching team built around, a scouting team, a youth coaching team built around that type of success, which is already there, thankfully, and kind of the stuff that you don't see on the weekends in 90 minutes. You know, that's really where that success can be built long term.
Lars, what does this mean for Edin Terzic and his future at Dortmund?
I think Edin is a very happy man right now because, as we've talked about ad nauseum now, there's a lot of familiarity, everybody knowing everybody. So I think that is probably also one of the reasons why Watzke envisioned this plan, because we all know how highly he regards Terzic and, an outside hire. I think in American sports, there's always this new regimes means new quarterbacks and new head coaches. And if we can, transfer that to football or soccer, I think if, for example, the one outside candidate that, was talked about a little bit was Markus Krösche of Eintracht Frankfurt, who I think would have been a fine choice himself. I think the chances of him sticking with Edin Terzic long-term especially would have been much smaller than, Lars Ricken, Sebastian Kehl and Sven Mislintat sticking with this, because obviously they know how they work together, maybe in different roles, but still they know their personalities. And I think Terzic sort of fits what they are likely going to be trying to do, which, as Matthias said, a bit more of a focus on younger players again, a bit more balance. And I think it makes sense to keep a head coach around, who's been quite successful, even though we are always talking about Dortmund having quite a lot of trouble. But, I mean, they're in the Champions League semi-final. They've won a cup under his guidance. So it's they were one goal away from winning the league last season. So it's not like he has nothing to show for his work. And obviously there's the very important factor of identification. And that is something, especially when you work with maybe quite a few new players, young players, I think it's important to have someone who makes clear relatively soon during their time in Dortmund how important this club is, not only for him personally, but for an entire city, entire region, millions of fans. So I think that all fits. And I think Terzic's long-term outlook is definitely better now than it would have been, let's say, Sunday evening.
All right, before we move on to the Leverkusen and Leipzig games, Lars, do you have any doubts or concerns about the setup that we haven't talked about yet?
I mean, maybe familiarity also breeds complacency a little bit. I think it's always a good idea to at least entertain the thought of going with a fresher perspective. But that doesn't mean necessarily that it won't work out. So obviously there's always a chance that, something goes terribly wrong. And we do know that especially Mislintat and Kehl are quite strong personalities. So I think a lot of people in the media are expecting there to be some sort of clash reasonably soon, maybe even during their first transfer window together. Who's to say that that won't happen, obviously, but I mean, they are in their roles for a reason. They all want to keep their jobs long term. Even Sebastian Kehl, despite this disappointment that he's surely feeling. I mean, how could he not? So I think that's something that people might just be looking for a bit more than necessarily is likely to happen. But obviously something like that can always derail even a perfect plan. So who's to say?
Yeah. All right. I think we spent enough time on this subject, even though I think it is quite significant and needed some time to talk about. Now, Matthias, on or back to the Leverkusen game, which of course ended in a 1-1 draw with a nice little brawl in between. The German champions, not that much to play for other than their winning streak, I guess, in the first division. And unfortunately, they did manage to keep that alive with pretty much the last kick or header of the game. But overall, what do you make of Dortmund's performance and how they stacked up against the German champions, who obviously rotated a little bit since the likes of Wirtz, Schick, Boni Face did not play from the start?
Meh. no, I mean, okay. It was better than the first time, which that's not hard. The result was pretty much the same as the first time. You know, I don't even know personally. I think, yeah, Dortmund played significantly better than the first time they played against Leverkusen. It was way less this chicken shit, scared football that still got them a point last time. And so, it, you know, questioning is what's the right approach? I think they're on the right track here. I would have liked to have seen them put Leverkusen under a little bit more pressure, whilst at the same time, I understand the fear of being completely carved open. Leverkusen had the better chances overall, which you could see also in the XG. It's not like they had a ton more shots on target or anything like that. They had 3 versus Dortmund's 2. Dortmund had 8 shots total, and Leverkusen had 13 total. Without a doubt, Dortmund way less passive than they were in the past against them. You know, you could even see that just in tackles made versus what Leverkusen. So they try to get more stuck in. They lost a little bit on the possession battle, but not as egregiously as the last time. So, you know, the fact that Dortmund had no offsides, despite a decent amount of long balls, I feel like they could have pushed Leverkusen a little bit more in this match than they did. At the end of the day, the goal that they did score, that Füllkrug scored, was a really beautiful goal. The entire setup for that, I thought, was really, really well. It's funny that Leverkusen kind of scored a scrappy goal. I think I read they scored 12 goals after the 90th minute this season. So I don't even know how many points they managed to get after 90 minutes off the top of my head. But 12 goals after 90 minutes, it's quite phenomenal. And you mentioned that little brawl there towards the end of the match. It annoyed me. I'm still trying to figure out how nobody got sent off. But okay, fine. I'm annoyed more about the fact that that's actually the time that got added because of that was what afforded Leverkusen the draw in the end. So, okay, fine. It pissed me off more now than I just kind of moved on. So it was okay. it was okay from Dortmund. It wasn't great. They didn't get outclassed completely. It wasn't embarrassing like it was the first time they met. So I guess better.
I guess, Lars, what are your talking points from that game?
To be honest, I think the Bundesliga is kind of dead for Dortmund. Ever since we know that, or we've known that fifth place is with a likelihood of 98 point whatever percent going to be enough to qualify for the Champions League. And obviously Dortmund have the avenue of actually winning the damn thing this season. I sort of think they've let down, you know, a couple of percentage points. Leverkusen definitely did, because that was the least intensive I've seen them. I don't know if that's down to celebrating too hard, down to maybe also the, you know, emotional draw against West Ham, because obviously that also kept the streak alive. So I think this game deserved to end in a goalless draw. I think Leverkusen were the slightly better team, but not by any crazy amount. I don't necessarily recall too many clear-cut scoring opportunities for them, and definitely not for Dortmund. And then basically out of nowhere, Füllkrug scored the goal, and then Leverkusen remembered that they have this crazy streak going and turned it up. Did enough to deserve the equalizer, I would say, even though obviously, as Matthias said, the circumstances are a bit annoying. I was definitely also annoyed by Jeremy Frimpong, who's a great player and, from all I can tell, a nice dude outside of the 90 minutes, but he was constantly on the floor. He was constantly bitching and whining when he was fouled, but also when he wasn't. The brawl itself, I think the red card for Boniface was laughable, because he didn't actually do anything particularly untoward. He was actually punished for something Granit Xhaka did, which was also not hugely, you know, problematic. I mean, he dragged Schlotterbeck down, but I don't think there was any malicious intent in there. It's just something that happens in football from time to time. So, yeah. I mean, as I said, ultimately, I think, given the fact that fifth place, for all intents and purposes, is going to be enough, you know, they kind of let that one game slide a bit, maybe focusing a bit more on Leipzig this weekend, because obviously if they lose against Leipzig, then fourth place is pretty much out of the window and they can put all their efforts into the Champions League. But it was kind of a weird game in that way.
Yeah, a draw in that sense is a good result, because now you can mathematically leapfrog Leipzig with a win on Saturday, I think the game is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from that perspective, I must say I personally am very annoyed with the very late goal from Leverkusen, because I wanted their stupid winning streak to end. And the fact that Dortmund managed to concede a sad piece once again really had my blood boiling on Sunday. So, yeah, I'm still not quite over it. And the Sixers bottling game 2 against the Knicks certainly did not help matters overall this week. So I am not very much a happy camper. Matthias, how did you see Bino Gittens and then later Duranville, who obviously Bino Gittens started since Daniel Malen is still out injured. Adeyemi is suspended.
What's going on, everyone? Taylor Kyle's here for Seal.
Sorry.
What's going on? All right, well, I'll tell you what's going on.
I'm pretty sure you also said Seahawks fans, which I'm quite surprised by, because I'm not a Seahawks fan. Sorry.
All right, Matthias, before I ask you about the Legion of Boom, let's ask you about the Legion of Doom, which is Dortmund bottling things against Leverkusen. honestly, Bino Gittens and Duranville, I think, deserve to be talked about.
Mm-hmm. So, Bino Gittens, I thought he did okay. His passing is really good. I feel like that's a part of his game that's really improved a lot. He didn't lead the team in carries, which was kind of interesting. It's those tend to be actually your defenders, at least at Dortmund. I'm surprised his take-ons keep going down versus someone like Jadon Sancho. You know, that was an area we kind of bemoaned at times with Bino Gittens, that he tried it too often and it didn't happen. No, I feel like he's not trying it often enough. So he's still feeling his way there, but he is just 19. Duranville, I'll be honest. I mean, he attempted more take-ons than Bino Gittens in the short time he was on the pitch. comparatively. I mean, he was 8 minutes. Bino Gittins, 82 minutes. He was actually successful once. So it's that youthful, I'm going to try. But overall, you know, he kind of stuck with it. He had, if I remember, one really good scene where he, you know, he was tenacious after the ball, which I love seeing in young players. But in 8 minutes, his impact was marginal, aside from, I believe, giving away one weird free kick. But beyond that, it's just good to have him back on the pitch. Someone so young who we had a lot of hopes for, and then basically he got injured for an entire season. So that just gives Dortmund another attacking option on the wings, especially given that, you know, the Marco Reus situation is kind of up in the air right now. So those are those young players. The unfortunate thing is Bino Gittins and Duranville both aren't proving to be reliable when it comes to health and fitness. So hopefully that is something that will change.
Yeah, I hope so. Obviously, Duranville looked very raw, and yet the handball, if you will, ultimately led to the goal, and it was a very unfortunate circumstance, but Dortmund more or less had enough opportunities to defend their own goal, to be honest. But now moving on against Leipzig, Dortmund will be, of course, without Ian Maatsen and Emre Can, because both were booked for their fifth yellow, meaning they will be suspended. And Emre Can itself is a talking point in this game. The very weird penalty no call that he had, where he stepped on someone's Achilles, and VAR deemed that it must have been a hair outside of the line, because otherwise it would have been a slam dunk penalty. And of course, we all remember the video going viral later where he was demanding the ball, and obviously Schotterbeck did then pass it back to him, and not in a good way. But Emre Can still made the wrong call to then try to dribble around the pushing on player instead of just passing it back to Kobel, and thus it ending in a turnover and then a dangerous counterattack for Leverkusen. Overall, I thought he looked not great in this game, but you know, he is Emre Can, and we've talked about it quite often. It's obviously annoying that Ian Maatsen will miss against Leipzig, because I think he is obviously a key player, but in ahead of PSG, you know, I'm also not quite sad about the rest that he will get, because as a fullback, you obviously have to run a lot, and Marius Wolf in the deputizing role looked okay against Leverkusen, so we'll see. Lars, you already talked about the circumstance that fifth place is probably going to be good enough to qualify for the Champions League. So how seriously should Dortmund take the Leipzig game now, considering that there is a Champions League semi-final around the corner after it? And of course, PSG have already postponed the game between those two semi-final games. Dortmund have not opted to postpone the Augsburg game. I don't even know if this was ever an option, but I just read this on Twitter.
Just an option if you're Real Madrid or PSG, let's be honest.
I must say I was a little dumbfounded just reading this. I don't know if it's confirmed or not, because it's just the BVB news blog, so you always have to take this with a grain of salt. But last, back to my question, what emphasis do Dortmund put on this game now? Because obviously there's not a guarantee that fifth place will mean a Champions League qualification.
I mean, it's as close to a guarantee as you can get at this point. I think actually...
What has to go wrong for Germany to not get the fifth place?
Basically lose all the six semi-final matches of Bayern, Dortmund and Leverkusen. If one of them makes it to the final, it's guaranteed. If Aston Villa doesn't make it into the Conference League final, I think it's also guaranteed. Although France could theoretically also get past Germany, but that's even less likely. So for all intents and purposes, we can assume that fifth is going to be enough. And if not, then no, that's a worse collapse.
Who do Leverkusen
Roma.
Play?
Roma.
So basically you're saying that it's realistic that all three make it past, because I don't know if Bayern will make it past Real Madrid. Dortmund are certainly outsiders against PSG, and I don't know if Leverkusen will lay an egg in the UEFA Europa League. So I don't know if that's such a slam dunk. Doesn't sound
I think to me. Even if that happened, I think it might actually be enough to win one of the six semifinals and one draw. So the permutations are so very obviously in Germany's favor that most people are just assuming it's basically a done deal. So that's what I'm choosing to do because I'm not going to do maths on a podcast. for the postponement of the PSG game, that's not actually PSG who've done that. It's Ligue 1 policy to do that for their teams in Europe. I think if Marseille wanted to do that, they could probably do the same. Not sure, because they are in the Europa League semifinal as well. And it's just not German Bundesliga policy to do that. And, you know, Premier League doesn't do it usually either. So I don't think we can necessarily hold that against PSG. Obviously, there's enough other reasons to hold PSG in contempt, but that's not necessarily one of them. The Leipzig game, I think Dortmund will take quite seriously, not least because it's Leipzig. There's a lot of animosity there, even if it's mostly from, you know, a fan perspective these days, because I think Watzke and so on, they've sort of accepted that Leipzig is here and it's kind of pointless to rail on against them. Also, Watzke has worked quite closely with Oliver Minzlaff, who now runs all sports for Red Bull, who was the CEO of Leipzig during the pandemic. And he was also part of the German FA task force after the Qatar World Cup debacle and all that stuff. So, I think they are going to take this game very seriously because it's also about fourth. You know, if you are scared of Mars, just make fourth or win the Champions League. And I think we are in agreement that making fourth in the Bundesliga is a bit easier to do than beating PSG over 180 minutes and then beating either Bayern or Real Madrid in Wembley. So, you know, if this game goes wrong, then obviously the Bundesliga is dead for them because they're not going to make up 5 points in three matches over Leipzig, who've been on a great run of form. I think they've won like 19 of the last 21 points in the Bundesliga. And obviously Leipzig haven't been in Europe for quite a while now, so they are well rested all the time, which obviously lends itself quite nicely to the style of play Leipzig always have and also have under old pal Marco Rose. So yeah, I genuinely think they also kind of want to, you know, eradicate the somewhat bitter taste of the Leverkusen game, because if you actually listen to or read what Edin Terzic said after the game, he was quite angry with the performance, which I found interesting because it came on the back of obviously the Atletico game, and it is Germany's new champions, clearly the best side in Germany, one of the two or three best sides in Europe this season, I would say, in Leverkusen. So maybe getting a point against them, one could have expected him to be more happy with that, but he was quite angry with the performance. So that's not how they want to go into the first leg against PSG, which obviously is at Dortmund. So they need to, you know, lay the groundwork for a final appearance with a win at home. I think we are probably all in agreement that Dortmund are not going to turn around the tie in Paris if they had to. So getting into a good groove means taking the Leipzig game seriously. And as I said earlier, if they win, then they will obviously keep, you know, trying in the Bundesliga, let's say. But if they were to lose, and I suppose maybe even with a draw, then the focus would shift basically entirely onto the Champions League.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for a win, but honestly, I'm a bit more in the maths camp. Like, my emphasis is obviously more on the Champions League currently, and if Dortmund don't win in Leipzig, to me, it's not going to be the end of the world. Matthias, do you see it similarly, or do you think that beating Leipzig is very important?
I would say beating Leipzig is very important because it's very important to the fan base. And given the amount of people at the club, coaching staff and so on that are, let's call it Dortmund indoctrinated, they're definitely going to be up for this one and to win it. I do agree that a loss means the focus is going to shift entirely away from the league, which it should at that point. I mean, Dortmund are going to be fifth. Frankfurt would have to make up a 17-goal difference in 4 matches, and that's just not going to happen, I don't believe.
Easy.
Especially because Frankfurt have been just so consistent the last couple of months. No, I think that's the key thing. I think a draw, you know, they're still within that touching distance of fourth, but you know, they kind of have a lot of it in their own hands, depending on how they perform against PSG. But that's got to be the main focus, even beyond the league at this point. Yeah, finishing fourth would be great, because then, like Lars said, you don't have to do the math. But the odds are very much in favor that fifth place will be enough to make it into the Champions League, which would be nice. At which point, who cares? I still want Dortmund to beat Leipzig every single time. It's like they play Hoffenheim, or, you know, in 10 years, if they ever play Schalke again, it's important to win. But the focus, if you're in the Champions League semifinal, you know, obviously that's going to be your focus, because you have the opportunity to go to a Champions League final again, and once again in Wembley, which is interesting. So, yeah, it would be important, especially because, you know, they've played PSG twice already this season. The first time they played against them was kind of like the Leipzig match, in the sense of it was embarrassing the first time they played against them, or Stuttgart, it was embarrassing the first time they played against them. So they want to course correct there and put their best foot forward in that home tie against PSG. So that is the focus. I would expect it to be the focus, while at the same time you need to beat Leipzig. I agree with you, the fact that Ian Madsen is kind of getting a forced rest against Leipzig is good for Dortmund with eyes on the Champions League.
Yeah, I really do hope that Riasson will make the semifinals of the Champions League, because I think he has been laboring with some sort of tweak or something, and you know, the way he plays, he just goes extremely hard in every game. You saw it against Leverkusen as well, and I just hope that he doesn't, you know, pull a muscle or something during the Leipzig game. So that is sort of my only concern, and I was hoping that ideally you play Riasson and Madsen one half each, if that makes sense, and otherwise, you know, have Zulu and Wolf or whatever play as fullbacks. I'm not entirely sure how that would work, but I think Wolf can also play on the left side if need be. Certainly not ideal, but, you know, I think if there's a chance to make a Champions League final, you should take it. I too really hate Leipzig, and I really wish they would not exist, but you know, I think they're a bigger fish to fry, if that makes sense. Anyway, I thank you both for coming on the show and talking about a very important subject with Dortmund restructuring their front office. So I hope everyone out there had fun listening to that. And yeah, we will definitely be back after the Leipzig game, because I think Champions League semifinal deserves its own preview. So we will talk about PSG and the two legs in the week coming up. So until then, have a nice weekend. Goodbye.